This episode of The Yarn is sponsored by Heinemann in their professional book, Breathing New Life into Book Clubs, Practical Guide for Teachers. Colby talked with co-author Sonia Cherry Paul about the book.
In book clubs, our kids were really reading. They were excited and energized to read. And what we tried to do was to give educators lots of practical tips and strategies. You know, once you sort of think through those big pieces of the puzzles, you'll get swept up in the excitement and the fun that the kids are experiencing, and it won't feel as intimidating as we might imagine. Hopefully, this is a book that inspires teachers to light a fire for reading in the classroom.
So, whether you're looking to freshen up your classroom book clubs or begin implementing them for the first time, Breathing New Life into Book Clubs is a great place to start. Visit Heinemann.com to learn more and order a copy.
Welcome to The Yarn, a school library journal production. My name is Colby Sharp. Today we have a very special episode for you. We have recently crowned Newbery medalist Tay Keller talking about her book, When You Trap a Tiger. I recorded this episode live on YouTube and Facebook, so it might sound a little bit different from what you're used to listening to on the show, but I think you'll enjoy our conversation. It was a lot of fun to talk to her about When You Trap a Tiger, about getting the Newbery call, about the new podcast she has with her husband. Tay is an amazing author and just a phenomenal person. I hope you like the show. Okay, hello. My name is Colby Sharp. I am a fifth grade teacher in Michigan. Welcome to tonight's live stream. I am really excited to have Tay Keller with me tonight to talk about her Newbery Medal winning book, When You Trap a Tiger, which if you haven't read, you are so lucky. You are so lucky that you haven't read this book, because reading this book for the very first time is something that you get to do, and I no longer get to do it. And experiencing this book for the first time is just a really special moment in a reader's life. So I am excited for you to do that. Without further ado, I'm going to bring in the latest member of the John Newbery Club, Tay Keller. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I am doing well. I'm so thankful that you are willing to give up a little bit of your evening tonight to chat with us about books and writing and the world. So thank you again for agreeing to do this on short notice. We actually met once.
Yes.
So, I would love to hear what you remember from, I think it was 2017, St. Louis, Missouri. The National Council for Teachers of English. You were a brand new author. Mm-hmm. Your book had not even came out yet.
Yeah.
So what do you remember about that conference and your springboard into the world of being a published children's book author?
I was so nervous. I was freaking out. This was my first event ever. And I was so scared that I was gonna, you know, say the wrong thing or do something ridiculous. And we met at a dinner and we were sitting next to each other. And I just remember being like, oh, this guy's nice. I'll just talk to this guy. And also Lisa Yee was at that dinner. And I was just freaking out because she was one of my writing heroes growing up. And I just was like sitting there kind of looking at her table like, should I go say hi? Can I do that?
And now we're coming up on three and a half years later. Mm-hmm. You have two books out. And I'm curious to know more about what it was like for you as a young writer, what school was like, what your journey was. Did you have good experiences in school? Was it bad? Did you write? Like, just tell me about what it was like growing up and what led you to this career as a writer.
Yeah, so I have always loved writing and I've always been writing. My mom is an author. So from the time I was born, I was always looking at her and she would be sitting there and writing her actual novels and I would be drawing my little masterpieces, you know. So that was always something that I loved. I think when I got to middle school, school became pretty difficult for me, just really socially. And so I dealt with a lot of bullying, and school wasn't really a place that I enjoyed being. And I had good teachers, but it was really hard for me to kind of get out of the mindset of just being kind of afraid to go to school. And at that time, my mom enrolled me in an after-school writing program. And I had this really incredible poetry teacher there. And she introduced me to a whole new world of writing. And she would print out these word lists and show me how exciting words could be and language could be. And she would show me poems. And I think that that's the point when I started using writing as a way to be myself in a time when I was really afraid to be myself, because I was so afraid to show who I was at school. And so I had this safe outlet where I could tell the truth and I could be honest. And I think that's why I write middle grade now, because that was so formative for me as a person and as a writer. And when I think about telling the truth in writing, that's kind of the time that I always go back to.
And where did you go from there, from the middle school writing club? Was it just like, I'm going to be an author, let's go, John Newberry, watch out, here I come?
I at that point, I wasn't thinking that I would be an author, but it did become something that I did, you know, on the side in secret. And I started to try write novels. And in high school, I wrote these, you know, at the time I thought it was so great, but they were really just Hunger Games knockoffs. So that's what I was doing for a while. And then when I graduated college, I was trying to find a job in publishing, and I was going out to these interviews and you know, trying to find work. And in those few months where I was looking for a job, I started writing because I didn't know what else to do. That was what I had always done when I was in challenging spots. So I started to write, and that is the time when I wrote Science of Breakable Things. Mm.
And now we have another book. Can you tell us a little bit about When You Trap a Tiger and talk about writing it? I would love to hear that story.
Yeah. So that book kind of started from a conversation that I had with my hominy, my grandmother. And she was teaching my sister and I how to make kimchi. And that is a very long process. It basically takes all day, and you're just doing a lot of waiting. And in the waiting, she filled that time with stories from her childhood in Korea. And I hadn't heard these stories from her before, because when I was growing up, she always told me these Korean fairy tales, and you know, the tiger story, the sun and the moon story is a fairy tale that made it into the book, but she hadn't told me about her real life. And that was kind of a pivotal moment for me and my relationship with her, because I realized how many stories she had and all this history, this family history that I wasn't aware of. And so from that point, I started to go back and learn more about my family history. And I started to learn more about Korean history too. And I was learning so much. And as I was doing this research, I felt like I was understanding myself in a way that I really hadn't before. And so all of those kind of emotions about identity and about my relationship with my grandmother, that all kind of became what is now When You Trap a Tiger.
How much of the overall story and the arc did you have, do you think, when you sat down to, you decided you were going to try to make it a book?
Basically none.
That's amazing. That's so scary.
Oh yes. And my editor was incredible. She was very patient through the process, because I would go to her and I'd be like, I have this idea about a tiger. And she's like, okay, what else? And I'd be like, and it's raining. And she's like, okay, maybe keep going. But this book went through 20 drafts, and a lot of those drafts were complete rewrites. So I just basically delete everything except for this idea about this quiet girl who sees this tiger from her grandmother's stories. And I was restarting the actual plot maybe 6 or 7 times. And then from there, revising.
What do you think was the key to making it so magical? Like, what was there, like a certain draft? Was there a turning point? Was there like an aha moment? Or was it just slowly brick by brick?
There were a couple aha moments. And I think that the biggest things were that I really had to figure out the star story. So there are these star jar stories in the book, and they're kind of based a little bit on actual Korean folklore, but a lot of it is invented and kind of tied into the narrative with Lily and her journey. And so those star stories were revised completely multiple times. And I knew that I wanted to have this idea of this tiger who was half human and half tiger and wanted to be human. So she asks this Korean god to make her human and take away her tiger magic. And I kind of had this idea for a long time. And when I was really struggling with this book, I went back and I started reading through Korean folklore and just trying to understand it better. And I rediscovered the Korean origin story. And so basically that story is about a bear who goes to the sky god and asks the god to turn her human. And I had kind of heard that story before, but I found a version of it that is, there is a bear and there is also a tiger who goes to the god. And the tiger asks the god to turn her human. And he says, okay, but you're going to have to live in a cave for a month and you can't eat anything. And she says, no. And so he banishes her. And I read this origin story and I was just kind of mind blown that this whole time I'd been kind of struggling with this story about this tiger that wants to be human and how does that work? And all along, this story already existed in Korean folklore. And that was this moment that was just kind of magic to me, where I was just realized that, you know, it feels sometimes like I'm just working alone in my kitchen by myself, but really I'm part of this much longer storytelling tradition. And these stories, you know, in some kind of mystical way are part of me. And so that kind of unlocked this idea of, okay, so this is the tiger in my story. And so now she's coming back. And what does she want?
Hmm. What is the hardest part of the process for you?
That's a really good question. I think that it's the end when I've revised it 20 times and it's finally time for the book to be done. And it's before the actual publication. There's about a year when I'm finished before the book actually comes out, because that's when my publisher is working their magic and turning it into a book. But there's this real sense of almost loss, which sounds a little bit dramatic, but I spend at least 2 years working on a story, and then I have to let it go, and I have to be okay with the fact that it's not this perfect idea that I had in my head, that it's real in all its imperfections, and yet I'm putting it out there and I'm hoping that it's going to resonate, but I don't know if it's gonna resonate.
Have you had feedback from readers? Does it seem like it's resonating with kids?
Yeah. And that's always incredible. You know, like the whole Newbery and everything has been amazing, but really it's hearing from kids and knowing that it's helping them. And, you know, especially this year, I couldn't have known, of course, that this book would come out in a year that has been awful and has been so much. We've all had to deal with so much loss, like personally and as a society and a culture. And COVID has been a time when so many people have been losing their elders. And now too, like the violence against the Asian American community that has come from how the previous administration has dealt with coronavirus. There's so much weight now, and there's so much grief that we're dealing with. And I've heard from readers who feel that when they come to my book, and that has been, it's a really profound thing when a story that you write can help someone who is struggling. And it's a lot to carry, and I hope that I'm able to see these readers with, you know, and carry their grief with empathy and with the responsibility that that requires. And I hope that this book does help them in some way.
It's remarkable to think that something that helped you as a middle schooler when you were struggling is now able to help kids who are struggling for whatever reason. It's kind of remarkable to think about. When we talked about, you know, this book coming out in a time that's so hard, and you talk about getting to know your family story, it makes me think about all of the people who didn't get a chance to document those stories or to hear those stories told. With the time of recording this, I think we've lost about 500,000 American lives to COVID. And I just think about all of those people who didn't get a chance to hear more stories from their family. I pick up my kids every day, my little guy, from my parents' house because it's right next to the school. And, you know, just that 10, 15 minutes, just trying to hear stories, you know, from my parents growing up, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I think that is something we don't do a good enough job with, is the stories of the people that we love and the stories of the people in our lives. So thank you for that reminder. These stories from our own families can really inspire, maybe not necessarily writing a book, but for us to do great things in our own lives. And like you said, the Newbery is one thing, but those stories with the kids and hearing kids and teachers and how this book is impacting people is why we, so many of us, love books and love reading. And the winning the Newbery Medal doesn't make this book any better or any worse, but it does bring it to more readers, which I'm guessing has been pretty interesting month for you. What do you remember about the Newbery Medal? Do you have any memories as a kid? Do you remember seeing the sticker? Do you remember reading The Giver? What do you remember from the medal?
I remember the sense that these stickers meant the book was good and exciting. And you know, it was always kind of this adventure, like, oh, this book has a sticker, and where's this book going to take me? And some of my favorite books were Newbery books. I mean, The Giver, like you mentioned, Linda Sue Park, incredible. Kate DiCamillo, and Holes. Holes is probably my favorite middle grade book ever. And actually, I went back when I was writing When You Trap a Tiger, and I was studying how he did it because it's brilliant. But it's amazing to think that, you know, I saw these books on shelves. I had these books on my shelves, and to be part of that is completely surreal.
It's forever, right? Like it is an exclusive club that you are now a part of. I would be banished from the children's literature community if I did not ask if you could share what it was like getting the call. So take it away.
So I got the call on Zoom, like everything in this past year. And I thought that it was going to be the Asian Pacific Award Committee, because I just found out about that award. And then my publisher was setting up the Zoom call. And so that's what I thought I was, you know, walking into or logging into. And the screen came up, and I saw everybody, and they said, oh, this is the Newbery Committee. And I kind of was like, no, you got the wrong link. And I don't even really remember what I said. I just was like really confused for a minute. And then I said, oh, can you repeat that? Because I'm not sure that I'm hearing you correctly. And then they launched into the full speech again and did it all over. And it was wild.
So then you hang up on Zoom. Mm-hmm. And then what does one do from there on a Sunday afternoon?
Burst into tears. and my husband was kind of watching from the other room, and he ran over and he was like, was that the Newbery? Did you do it? Did you win? And I think my sobbing was enough of an answer.
Okay, so you win the Newbery Medal and then you can't tell anyone.
Yes.
And usually it's the morning, like in a normal year. You had to wait, like you had to go to sleep.
I and didn't sleep.
So you stayed up in
1 hour. One hour. I called my family, and I also called some of my best friends, which I maybe shouldn't admit because not live at all. Yeah.
So do you feel that? What is it like in these weeks coming forward? Have you been able to write anything? Do you feel any pressure now, or is it just you're back in the lab, or you're just enjoying this, or you're between projects or edits? Like, how is that month with your job as a writer affected by that? You have to do things like this. And
it's totally changed. So one of the wildest things about the day of the announcement was that I heard from some of the other Newbery winners. And this was like, oh my gosh, I love you guys. but they were telling me, you know, your life is about to change. And I was like, you know, that's nice, but I don't think it's going to change at all. And that may have been naive because my career, at least, has changed a lot. And it's also kind of funny because I used to talk about how many emails I got because I felt like that was like, you know, the adult business thing to do is like talk about your inbox. But like, honestly, I got like a few emails a week. But now it's like, I actually get emails now. And it's kind of a little bit stressful, but it's all very exciting. I think I'm really happy that I have a draft of my next book already done, because I think the pressure of facing a blank page now would be really high. So I'm glad that I'm towards the end of that revision process.
So you feel like you've been able to properly enjoy this amazing month as much as one can in a pandemic?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. You'd be able to enjoy and celebrate. It's such an amazing thing. And it felt so fun from my side of it it felt like, even though I was watching with 19 of my 29 students, because 10 are learning from home, even though they were sitting in rows, not in groups, even though we were wearing masks, it honestly felt, Tay, like the most normal school has felt all year. Like that 1 hour where we're just all sitting and cheering for the books that we know, and I'm running around the room. And when you won, I instantly break into book talks of The Science of Unbreakable Things. And now Audrina's reading the book in class, and you know, we're pulling all these books, and it was just so fun to just celebrate something with people that love books. So I'm so happy for you and thankful that you're getting a chance to get this book into the more hands of more kids. I want you to know a little bit about your podcast. And friends, if you are listening on the Yarn Podcast, if you're watching on whatever channel you're watching, Tay has an amazing, I think it's a monthly newsletter. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
And you're going to be able to continue that even now that you're like a Newbery medalist. You can still get that monthly email out. So we expect it. It's an amazing newsletter. So if you are not subscribed, is it taykeller.com?
Yes.
And you need to subscribe to her monthly newsletter, because I did, and I found out about her podcast, which is the coolest idea ever for a podcast. Can you tell us about the show, what it's called, where we can find it, and just a little taste of what we can expect?
Yeah. So it's called Movie Culture, And my husband and I are watching through the entire Pixar catalog and kind of breaking down the themes in it, what these movies mean, and how movies create meaning through their structure, kind of from like a craft perspective. It's fun because we had the idea to do this podcast, you know, months before the Newbery happened, and happened to be launching this podcast at the same time. So I told my friends, I texted them and I was like, oh, Josh and I have a podcast now. And my friends are the worst and the best because they're just like, this is not an exciting announcement after we heard about the Newbery. But we have a lot of fun. And I mean, I've been learning a lot actually, just watching Pixar from the standpoint of, okay, how did they put these stories together? And what does it mean? And how do these movies signal messages to kids? And why is it important to think about what messages kids are receiving?
Can you give me an example or give us an example of what something you talked about or something you learned from one of the films?
Yeah. So we just watched WALL-E.
WALL-E,
yes.
Eva.
So we talked a lot about how that movie kind of lets you bond with WALL-E and why that's significant in a world where it's a post-apocalyptic climate disaster, and why it's important to still be able to connect and find beauty in a world that, I mean, humans have destroyed essentially, because we have to be able to come back and to love this world and to bring it back to life. But also some really interesting messages about the dignity of work in WALL-E that I think is really, really, really interesting, and how labor makes us human and how those messages can be useful in some ways, but also maybe dated in other ways and not necessarily the best messages to be sending to kids right now. So I think it's interesting to look at Pixar, which, I mean, I love these movies so much. But also these movies, a lot of them were created at this point decades ago. And so it's important to look back and think, okay, from this modern sensibility, what did these movies look like and what are those messages?
That's so weird. That's so like fascinating to think about. Like because I have 5 children, like I just watch WALL-E and I don't ever obviously think about all of those things. But I'm thankful that in a time like in WALL-E that there was a lot of darkness. Like we have a lot of darkness right now. Mm-hmm. And thankfully we have books like When You Trap a Tiger and authors like Tay Keller to help bring us some light. And I thank you so much. And I am so excited to see what's next. And I know that you'll figure out how to stay in the lab and continue to put 20 drafts in, and no pressure from us. Just keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate you and your work and are thankful that our classroom has a couple of your stories, and we look forward to more. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Yarn. Thank you to Tay Keller for giving up a little bit of your evening to chat with me about your amazing book. Thank you to the 2021 John Newbery Committee for all of their hard work. They picked a phenomenal group of books, including the medalist When You Trap a Tiger. Thank you to my co-host, Travis Yonker. Travis's book, Blue Floats Away, is amazing. You need to buy it. Comes out March 23rd. I got an early copy, read it to my students. It just blew them away. It's illustrated by Grant Snyder. You need this book. Thank you to Heinemann Publishing for sponsoring this episode. And thank you to Runner, Michigan alum, Phil Stead, for creating our amazing theme song. Thanks, everyone. My name is Colby Sharp. I hope you have an awesome, fantastic day.